your manger, dogs. Swab the decks and hoist the sails. The guns on board be needing some proper manning. Pieces of eight and a fine wench on your arm. If your work be not too shoddy. Careful not to flounder too badly, though, or you may have to dance the hempen jig as we see you to Davy Jones. Jeffy, my boy, on with the show.
Avast, me hearties. To our listeners from across all regions of the planet, welcome once again aboard the Robin Hood, flagship to the world's one and only cooperatively inspired charity podcast network, WPRPN. Live streaming today from somewhere off the coastal shores of Korea's nuclear-tripping, sadly psychedelic-free peninsula, you've tuned in to this week's special, September 11th, Never Forget, Always Remember, Episode 74 of Pirate Radio Podcasts. I'm your host, as always, the ship's chief communications officer, Jaffe Ryder. 16 years now since the world was plunged into widespread conflict and chaos, we reflect on the bloody legacy and devastating impact of a day which will forever live in infamy. To many of those who witnessed the events unfold, either in person or live on television, it was obvious these attacks would carry with them long-lasting geopolitical implications. Cynically seized upon by dangerous political opportunists, we've since witnessed the emergence of what many have described as a thoroughly fascist New World Order and multi-headed Hydra, whose each and every pathological desire aims to wage war upon all freedom-loving citizens. While the crew here on the Robin Hood strives to do its best, we'll encourage listeners to equally maintain their sense of vigilance, fearlessly persisting to ask the unthinkable, refusing to settle for anything less than the naked truth, never forgetting what it is they'll hopefully one day clearly remember. And as with last year, some pretty rough and rocky seas, looks like we're having to head out on to this week. Welcome, everyone. Episode 74, Pirate Radio Podcasts, our September 11th special. Taking a rather somber tone, actually. I'm not sure how much comedy we're going to be able to work into things here today, or at least attempted comedy. But, you know, we had a lot of material to plow through here and a lot of talking points to cover. So what's really great about things, though, is that we have been joined here on deck by James West, a.k.a. Tyranny Unmasked. You're not up in the crow's nest for this episode, so that's you'd be able to keep your lunch down a little easier that way, I guess, James.
Of course. You know, I'm always happy to be here, man.
Yeah, it's been a while. Haven't had a chance to connect for some time now. So
yeah, I've been working on a lot of projects lately and trying to get a lot of stuff done. And, you know, it just gets completely – everything is busy. You're just busy doing something all the time. And not to mention back and forth across the country and issues with the TSA and this and that. A lot of stuff that slowed me down and hindered me and caused me to have to catch back up.
Wow, issues with the TSA, huh? How about that? And of course, speaking of September 11th, maybe we can get to that a little later. But let's hear then, just for people who don't know who James West, a.k.a. Tyranny Unmasked, is, why don't you give them a bit of an overview of the work that you've been busy with here over the past, I guess, number of years, really, different projects that you've been spending your time working on?
Well, initially I came onto the scene more so than not to actually put out a voice towards the Syrian people, and more so I've been this voice for, you know, this American voice for the people of Syria, because I noticed the injustices that were going down, not social justice, but injustice, real injustice to where our country was not abiding by international law. And of course I had a upbringing to where I was recognizing the reasons why our country was not doing this. So I was put at a special position that some people weren't raised to know. So with this foreknowledge and being able to see down the line and patterns and knowing why we are doing certain things we do, such as 9/11, you're able to almost predict what's going to happen next. And that's what I try to do. I try to let people know what's going down, what is going to happen next, and something about putting out there what's going to happen next in a way can hinder those actions from actually taking place, because if it becomes such a widespread notice that everybody knows that this is what you're trying to do, it becomes just that much harder to actually pull it off. It's the same thing with these false flags. It's the same thing with these, in some cases, they're almost outright hoaxes. And it's the same way with 9/11 with the false flags. The more that people are aware of it, the harder it is to pull these things off. And, yeah, that's basically the reason I jumped in. I jumped in because of, the tensions in Syria, especially around the end of 2015 when Turkey shot down a Russian jet. And at that point in time, things felt like it could cook off for real. So I said, what time better than now to jump in there? I have the knowledge. I have the ability to actually get down and get to the point, and I have the ability to put it together in a digestible manner to where people can comprehend it. I've seen videos and videos and videos of people going on for 2, 3, 4 hours and never really getting to the meat of the point. But because I had a film background, I could actually take that point and grind it down into about a minute or two and hit the nail on the head. And that was the point. And it wasn't all about all my knowledge that I know and, oh, I could see this or I could see that. And I think Jaffe fell offline, so I'm just going to keep going until he's back.
No, I'm still here. I'm just listening.
Okay.
It's okay. Just I was waiting for
you. No. Sure. Skype just popped up and said you were offline or something weird like that. But anyway, what I was saying is that yeah, I can put it together in a notion. Either it's a collection of knowledge that or a collection of theories that I have, or other knowledge that other people have gathered. And there's so many good sources out there, so many sources all over the place. And you'll have people know this or people know that, or yeah, I know about this or that. But when they don't have a full collection of it and they have all these different pieces, well, you'll have someone say, yeah, I know 9/11 was an inside job. But that same person won't know that there was also an Israeli connection to the inside job, or they might not know about all the stipulations around 9/11 and how evidence was shipped off, or how people had foreknowledge and there was recordings of people having foreknowledge and this or that. People have different pieces. And I kind of made it my goal to actually hop in here and to try to put those pieces together into a picture that people can actually digest. And I think that's something that was missing, especially in the geopolitical field when it came to Syria. So that's what I felt like I had to offer, and I've grown on that. I've added on to that and expanded. Well, that basically covers it.
Oh, well, well done, and thank you for that. Tyranny Unmasked, once again, is the handle that you go by. You've also... And you can be found over at Minds.com, I think.
Minds.com, yeah. Steemit.com, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, most of the main sites. I've got probably more than I can actually remember. I have a list somewhere, but I've made them everywhere. And the thing is I use a program called IFIT that runs all notifications into one place, so I could forget, lose track of which ones I have, because all of them send notifications to, say, one or two emails that I can keep up with, so I can keep up with all these different sites, you know, to reach out to everybody, these different communities in every different online platform you can find.
You've also got, I think it's called Texas UFOs, a channel on YouTube. I'm not sure if you have got that, you know, basically integrated into any other platforms or not. But that's another kind of side project.
That was a side project, basically because of what I had was actually seeing in Texas. And I'm getting a little bit of echo there, but that was actually I got into that before I started talking about the other. I was keeping up with all the other first, and I was very aware of everything that was going down first. But I was just doing that because of personal experiences and things I was seeing out there. And that's actually been put on the back burner for the most part, not only because I stopped seeing stuff that was unexplainable and film being able to film that. But another reason is because in some aspects it can take away from what I'm doing in the other. And I usually try to keep those separate for the most part. But if someone asks me about it, no, I'll be more than happy to explain it to them, you know?
Yeah. In fact, well, we've interviewed you on that subject in the past, and we'll probably have you back to discuss your story and what you witnessed yourself personally there a number of years ago, as well as just the ongoing drama surrounding things too, I'd imagine. In the meantime, though, we are here today to converse and discuss all things 9/11. Just, you know, want to thank you once again for joining us. The captain, from what I understand, has radioed in telling us that he's quite thrilled you're here. It would have only been the second show that I myself would have been left to handle on my own. And
really, out of all the shows, this is the second one you would have been solo.
Yeah, and I tell you, it's just not the most comfortable thing for me to do, honestly. Some people might find that a little surprising, but, you know, the art of articulation and... what would you say, soliloquy or just rambling, you know, and trying to express yourself in a half decent and semi intelligent way without sounding too overly pompous or on the flip side of things, uneducated. You know, it's kind of a high wire act. It's a fine line. It seems
you don't want to run out of things to say, huh?
Well, you know, and I've got my talking points here too, so that always helps. But it's always great to have people here to help ride shotguns. So
I'm firing from the hip today. I don't have any talk. I didn't have enough time to write down any, you know, bullet points. Yeah, so
you'll do fine, I'm sure.
I gotta shoot from the hip today.
We're gonna get into that whole neocon Greater Israel business in just a few moments here. So just you hang on tight, and don't worry. We're gonna spend a good few minutes hashing over all that business. So in the meantime, though, I'm just going to really kind of kick things off here by reminding people. Well, first of all, I guess, you know, last year, of course, we had Pirate Larry join us. So that was great. Big thanks to him, of course, too, for all the work he did over the course of, oh, gosh, 25, maybe 30 shows. Just kind of ballparking things there, but he was a great sidekick to have. What we've done since that time largely is just improvised, really, and if there hasn't been a guest to engage or converse with, then you know, we've had other people kind of, you know, tag along or join us to help out. But what happened last year was that we kicked things off with Johnny Depp reading from The Introduction of Gonzo, The Life and Work of Dr. Hunter S. Thompson. It was a documentary that came out dealing with the life and career of the good doctor back in 2008. Things opened up with Bob Dylan's All Along the Watchtower playing in the background, and Sony came down on us real hard. It didn't take too long at all. Not sure if that's a Bob Dylan thing or if it's a Sony is where the blame is squarely to be laid, but they demonetized things. And in fact, not only that, but they blocked the video worldwide. So what I'm going to do, though, in the meantime, is I'm going to read what Thompson wrote the day after the attacks. It comes from Hey Rube, the letter that he dated September 12, 2001. And what he and then later Depp read was, "The towers are gone now, reduced to bloody rubble. along with all hopes for peace in our time, in the U.S. or any other country. Make no mistake about it, we are at war now, with somebody, and we will stay at war with that strange and mysterious enemy for the rest of our lives. It will be a religious war, a sort of Christian jihad, fueled by religious hatred and led by merciless fanatics on both sides. It will be guerrilla warfare on a global scale, with no front lines and no identifiable enemy. This is going to be an expensive war, and victory is not guaranteed for anyone, and certainly not for a baffled little creep like George W. Bush. All he knows is that his father started a war a long time ago, and that he, the goofy child president, has been chosen by fate and the global oil industry to finish it off. That's what he wrote the day following September 11th, had published. Are you familiar with Hunter Thompson or any of the work he did, or just that what I just presented there?
Yeah, I actually heard it for the first time last year when you did it on the podcast.
Oh, yes. Hopefully this time nobody's going to be censoring us, although maybe, you know, this time it'll be his bereaved widow or something will come after us. So I have no idea, but I tell you, man, it's unfortunate when you see that sort of thing. Since then, we've added a little disclaimer kind of tag to each of our videos where we use the fair use. I'm not sure what it is, how it's stated exactly, or how it, ideally it's there to allow people to use quotes and different passages and content and whatnot for educational reasons primarily. On that note, though, I'm just going to quickly check and see if we have anyone over here in the live streaming chat area. It's a 30-second delay, of course, with the way things usually work and get cranked up. Looks like Joe Eminon is telling us things are streaming well. Graphics looking pretty good. Don't take any guff from these swine. They're always people you can call. Fear and loathing on the high digital seas. There you go, Joe. He's got the idea. It looks like Christina Taft, I'm guessing, from Hero Motivators has joined us here as well. So thanks to the two of you there so far. I'm not sure if we see anybody else yet. Moving along, you know, there's so much ground to cover, of course. Now, I'm going to let people know where I was on the morning of September 11th. I'm not going to go into the dream I had just before I woke up that day, but it was quite, as with a few people. Maybe what I could do, in fact, is Missy Nomer 69 from over on minds.com. I think she shared some comments with us over on the platform the other day after we posted, you know, the show, the link, and what we're going to be presenting to people here today. So she added her two cents, and we'll get into that in just a second. But my own personal recollection as far as, once again, that strange dream that I woke from on the morning of September 11th, we're going to share that in the after show. So if people want to join us there and check that out among any number of other great little tidbits or, you know, nuggets of conversation, then feel free to join us. Of course, that's exclusive content available only to participants and Patreon supporters. But, yeah, what happened was I got up, probably made my morning cup of coffee and headed into the living room. And really that morning, I did feel drawn to turn on the television. I don't know if I normally did that. Usually I went on the internet, but it wasn't too long after that. Well, immediately there was the image, of course, of the one burning tower that was on fire. And I, as I recall, saw live on television there up in, I was living in the central interior, British Columbia at the time. This is before I decided to pull up stakes and pack my bags and head over to South Korea in search of new economic opportunities. But yeah, right there live on television, saw the second plane hit the second tower. So, as with Hunter Thompson, realized at that point it was war. How could it be anything less? I went to the bank immediately. I didn't have much money deposited at the time, but I could see how this would cause a ripple effect too. I wonder how many other people did the same sort of thing, where they're getting, and that's a pretty stupid thing to do if you think about it, because it could, you know, immediate panic, people wanting to do and take whatever steps they could to secure themselves and be ready for any future crap coming down the pike. So, you know, was sure to do that, has some cash on hand, although who knows if things would have got taken a turn for the worse. Not sure if that would have paper government issued fiat currency would have been really worth all that much. I mean, and here's the thing, James, that I just don't understand, especially with alternative media figures and talking heads, such as, I know, one of your favorites, Alex Jones, who the life of him can't seem to figure out that we've been at war. World War III has been running now for 16 years. Why is there so many, and alternative media, people don't get it. What's up with that? Why can't they see it?
Well, you'd have to watch my new documentary. A lot of them know, but they choose not to know after a little while because it doesn't fit the mainstream narrative, which is in the alternative media.
Yeah, you put something out there just a short while ago. It was a fake alternative news or something like that. Is that right?
Yeah, it was exposing. It was a crowdfunded project the entire viewer base of Tyranny Unmasked wanted to see. And I said, what did you guys want to see? I can do it for you. I just need a little bit of support to spend the actual time, because it took me way longer than I thought I would. It ended up being a full-length movie, essentially, because it's an hour and 20 minutes long. And I said, man, I could probably make a 25-minute video covering this. And once I actually got into making it, it ended up being an hour longer than that. But, the movie covers, I keep saying movie, it's like a documentary. The documentary covers the whole process of how we had infiltration into the alternative media, where people start out carrying the common taglines, and then they build their audience. And then over time, they'll slowly start slipping to more mainstream narrative or divide and conquer narrative, so they can divide, split, and basically just disperse the entire alternative media. They don't want any kind of structure. They don't want any kind of community. They don't want anything like that to last, because if you do, then it just only grows and grows and grows and grows and grows. And for one, they want it to disperse and not grow. But if it is going to grow, which it will, it's impossible to curb now unless they go full shut down, no internet, and that'll cause quite a huss and a fuss in itself. But at this point, it's going to continue to grow. So now they don't just diverse and try to disperse the community. They try to gather up who they can. They gather up everybody they can into these segregated groups. Again, keeping it split and divided, giving usually an arch enemy to each one. You know, like Alex Jones has his the Young Turks with Chink over there. And you've seen everyone's seen the video of them spitting at each other and wanting to punch and fight and screaming at each other.
Sure, that was the Republican National Convention. Classic stuff. I think clearly Alex came out on top as far as that whole
right. I mean, it was entertaining. Don't get me wrong. It's all entertaining. It's all fun to watch. But at the same time, there are underlying reasons for all these different actions to happen. I still watch all of them too, mainly just to keep up with what they're doing now, just so I can know when they switch tactics. But you have these big gatekeepers like Alex Jones that come in, they follow the narrative, and they speak the truth. And then once they get a big enough audience, they'll split and break off part of their audience, and they'll take all the people that will blindly follow Alex Jones because they put their trust into him, because, like, hey, he said this stuff, and now I gotta trust them because I've endowed my trust, and that can't be broken, apparently, because that's how a lot of people think. But then they take their their group of people over there, and then they steer them away from the Israeli evidence in 9/11. They'll steer them away from subversion inside of our government. They'll make you look at no Donald Trump, or they'll make you look at this, or 9/11 was just the Saudi Arabians. It was Saudi Arabia, and they did it for this or that. And they don't let you look at, well, who created Saudi Arabia? Was it created by the Wahhabs? Who were the Wahhabs? Well, they were in collusion with the Sabbateans, and then the Sabbateans were a deceptive form of Judaism that wasn't true Judaism. And Wahhab was not a Wahhabism is not a true form of Islam. So they steer you away from that, even though they previously, and you can find evidence for a lot of these major figureheads, evidence of them previously talking about this and speaking the truth. But then, like I said later on, steering you away from that and start focusing you on things that aren't necessarily the truth or half truths or things that are not as important as the real truth. So this is what this is what's basically laid out in my movie, and a lot more, because like I said, it's a full length movie. And it also jumps into things like flat earth and other discredit movements that came in.
Oh God. Yeah. Oh God.
It jumps into a lot of that. So if you're a fan of the flat earth and you go watch that movie, you're probably going to not want to listen to me anymore, but that's cool.
Well, you know, that depends, really. I mean, somebody with an open mind, it's like Aristotle talked about, the mark of an educated mind is one who can entertain a thought without necessarily embracing it or subscribing to it. You know, you can just kind of look at it. And in
the video, I point that out. And I also point out to where it's not just a grassroots theory at this stage. At one point, a long time ago, it was a grassroots theory based off of, you know, reasoning of the time. But now it's had a massive resurgence that all happened within a week of each other. Like, have proof that it all happened within a few weeks. You had all these channels go up simultaneously, and then overnight they had thousands of viewers. I mean, how long have your radio station been going, and how many viewers do you have? And you guys put in a lot of work all the time. I put in a lot of work all the time. You have people that double, triple, quadruple my and your size overnight without a previous blog or this or that. What I'm saying is that there was a lot of astroturfing. There was a lot of doppelganger. There was a lot of subversion going to create a feel of grassroots, but it wasn't really grassroots in a lot of the cases. Now, there are a lot of people that listen to those people, and they start to believe that way. There are real people that do that, but the initial majority of them were likely CIA subversion.
That definitely seems to be the case from time to time, the disinformation agents.
Right. In that kind of work, if you read the handbook of sabotage by the CIA that was declassified, if you read that handbook, it lays out the exact plan without mentioning flat earth in specific. But other than that, the plan is in there nearly to the T. So it's not like I'm just pulling it out of the hat, you know.
Just pretty much what you stated is what you're saying, point by point, is what people can find contained within their official. It wasn't an official release. It kind of leaked out, perhaps. But handbook.
No. It's a declassified handbook.
I see.
Right. And because it was like made in the 60s or whatnot. Then you can actually go look at documents such as 1035, 960. Yeah. And that one was obtained in 1971 or 73. I can't remember, by a Freedom of Information Act. And that one, they also lay out the whole process of discrediting different people in the truth movement at the time, which was mainly the people that were questioning the Warren Commission report on the JFK assassination. So there are real bits of evidence that point towards that the CIA really does that. And it's not just, like I said, it's just not conspiracy theory.
Well, people have to keep in mind, of course, too, there are conspiracy facts, and that conspiracy, you know, as far as I'm circumcised, goes largely hand in hand with politics. That, you know, it's the stuff that politics thrives and is thrives on and is fueled by, frankly. Without conspiracy, you know, I'm not sure where that would leave the whole political game.
Again, people just have to realize that all conspiracy is two or more people together to scheme behind someone's back. That's all a conspiracy is. It's not like automatically the wildest thing that is completely baseless without fact. All it means is people conspiring together, two or more people conspiring together to do harm.
Well, it doesn't have to be a criminal conspiracy. If you think about planning for a birthday party, a surprise birthday party, that's a conspiracy, but there's nobody getting hurt.
Oh, yeah, technically it is.
Obviously.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just you're just secretly a prank. Could be, you know, that's a conspiracy. You know, a couple people getting together and working on pulling the wool over someone's eyes. So, but what we're talking about here today is something a little different. One of the points that you really bring up here, and I think is important to for people to keep in mind, is this whole cult of personality. We've brought it up here before on the show, and I'll lay it out there for people again. And this is just a general principle, frankly, that we have to be wary of this sort of thing. When it comes to these charismatic, well-spoken, you know, well-read and educated individuals who, you know, they'll talk your ear off in a mile a minute, but they'll also, you know, in many cases speak with forked tongue. You know, so right. As you say, once there are people on board, their disciples or followers, they find it hard to kind of you know, turn their backs or just, you know, even just criticize them because they're so, they look upon them with such high regard that there's no, and they're critical, the people on the receiving end, the audience, their critical thinking skills, you know, maybe aren't really quite up to snuff, and they'll basically believe anything that they tell them. This includes, of course, the mainstream media in a big way, and I think this applies, you know, to, and is kind of what we've seen, how we think, seen things function over the last, well, since the rise of big media over the last, what, 50, 60 years at least, the television, radio. I mean, propaganda has been practiced since at least the days of ancient Rome. As far as I see things, that's in fact where the word comes. Pro-pagan, if, you know, duh. So that pagan really jumps out at me, and I've gotten into this discussion or debate with others, and they kind of want to just kind of brush it aside or deny it. But that, believe me, I there's something to that. It's for the country people. You know, it's for these the dummies, the bumpkins out in the sticks there, that you know, the intelligentsia, the heart of the, you know, the
right. And people have to realize that the propaganda has been legalized since 1948 through the Smith and Mundy Act.
Right. And in fact, it just recently, I think there was some kind of, you know, where things...
There was a revision to the Smith and Mundy Act after Sandy Hook in 2012, I think.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's just for the record. So that's not a theory. That's a fact. That's for the record, you know, state a fact of how now it's under, well, the NDAA, under Obama, in fact. Is that not the case? That's how it works, right?
Right.
There you go. So, all right. Well, yeah, that's a big deal, of course. Now, other than Alex Jones, who, you know, I myself, by no means a cult disciple, I will listen to the guy. I'll listen to anybody. But I'll also try to practice discernment and call bullshit where I feel it's necessary. So, you know, I think that's important for everyone to keep in mind. And hopefully most of the crew here, I think, on the Robin Hood are, they approach things in a similar way where they're able to do that. And what are the big names, though, as far, I have a few ideas of folks that you might have in mind, but if you don't, if it's okay, are you willing to throw a few other names out there as far as what you said. Now, I'm not sure this astroturfing term, what that means exactly, but...
Astroturfing is essentially, it's basically where you go. So grassroots is homegrown, natural. It was by the people for the people. It wasn't some kind of government
organic
conspiracy.
Yeah, organic.
Yeah, it was organic. Yeah. It wasn't somebody trying to manipulate consent. What astroturfing is where you go and you deliberately try to create consent where the consent really isn't there.
Or conversely,
you can either manufacture consent or you can manufacture discontent, which is, it works both ways. Right, exactly. And the way it was done with the flat earth movement is, they had all these different accounts. You can create as many Google accounts as you want with any names you want. In fact, you can get tools that do it automatically now, and I pointed out some of those. And you can go to different websites, and you can have your website, your YouTube channel filled with 1,000 subscribers in like a minute. You can just pay like $5 and get 2,000-3,000 subscribers that are just empty accounts. Or you can also get some that will put comments and whatnot. So it's not impossible to generate fake accounts or fake channels. And when you look at that, if you look at examples that have been caught and exposed, then you compare it to examples of at least the early days of, I say early days, but in late 2015, I believe. No, late, it was early 2015, late 2014 is when it started. I don't know if you remember TransAsia or whatnot, but it came out right about there, TransAsia, which was, it was a major conspiracy. It was just a complete bullshit thing where they tried to say a plane didn't crash in a lake in Asia. And then you had all these different channels hopping on saying, oh, no, the plane was CGI added in or this or that. And there was no reason for it to be added in. There was no reason for people to fake it. There was no agenda for a conspiracy. It was essentially there to just make people look idiotic, you know. It was there to make the truth community look insane. And then it went from there to people hopping on and mixing up truth with lies when it came to Sandy Hook. You had people mixing truth with lies when it came to the electric universe theory. And then you had straight up flat earth. And then you had dino hoax. And then you had Mandela effect. You had one where it says mountains were giant tree stumps. You had all kinds of different agendas. And in every case, you found that the big name players had signs of astroturfing.
Yeah, the Mandela effect is another one that definitely, along with the flat earth theory, my bullshit detector is doing overtime with those two and really kind of going off the scales. So, but let's, if we could kind of, just steer things back into the meat of the matter here, back things up to the morning of September 11th and how things essentially unfolded. I don't have an exact timeline in front of me here, unfortunately, but of course, I think we all recall the thing is too, people, you know, 9/11, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. Well, let's not forget, folks, the official narrative is also a conspiracy theory. All right? It's just that it's a particular version of events that the powers that be would prefer the general public buy into rather than taking a look at or entertaining any alternative ways of, you know, seeing things or understanding what actually occurred on that day. Let's not forget as well that the very word government, gubernmente, literally means mind control. So, you know, caveat emptor. But, 19 Middle Eastern radicalized Muslim fanatics, the majority of which were said to have been from Saudi Arabia. Quite strange. That country wasn't bombed. And of course, the wake of things here quite recently with the 28 redacted pages from the, I guess it was 9/11 Commission report finally came to light and clearly damning evidence, even within the context of that, what really was a total a whitewash of things. It just did not look good for the Saudis at all, of course. Not that they were the only ones involved, I don't think. My sense of it all is that it was a very sophisticated, of course, operation orchestrated at the highest levels from many multiple angles, and the cooperation and collusion courtesy of a whole number of agencies, including likely, you know, rogue elements of, within the CIA and FBI, the Saudi royals, yes, the Mossad, as we saw via the dancing Israelis that were later, they were nabbed, actually. I think it was a New Jersey cop doing a great job. You know, there are some great cops out there that it's good to have them doing that sort of work from time to time. But unfortunately, as I recall, Michael Chertoff, then head of the Department of Homeland Security, quietly released the art students. It was this spy ring, basically, was what happened. They exposed an Israeli spy ring, something that it was reported on to a certain extent throughout the mainstream media. But then as things turned out later, they were all just once again very discreetly returned back to Israel, where I think even during one interview they had over there, they admitted to being Mossad agents. It's also interesting to note, myself not being a huge fan of Michael Moore, he did, thank God, with his Fahrenheit 9/11 production, I think really you got to give him credit. And that's kind of how way I approach things. When somebody does good work, just, you know, you give them credit for what it is that they're putting out there, not necessarily that you're once again one of these cult disciples, but that he did note and draw to the world's attention via Fahrenheit 9/11 that I think it was Bush authorized that the day after 9/11 all of bin Laden's relatives be quietly flown out of the country. And this is, of course, while all of American and maybe even North American airspace had come to a grinding halt and was shut down. So nobody else was flying out or leaving the continent through the air except for people who at that time were siblings, relatives to, I guess, the primary suspect to this.
I actually think the main people that were being flown out were actually members of the Assad.
Oh, by the way, yeah, just to let people know, you hear a little bit of, we have some dogs of war on deck here. James could not help, but that was part of the deal here with him being on the show today, that we would have to include a dog or puppy of war.
A furry companion, huh?
So if you hear a little bit of barking there in the background from time to time, that's what that whole thing is all about. Go ahead, though, James.
I think it was members of the Saudi government that were being flown out. I did hear about Osama bin Laden's family as well, but we also have to remember that at the time that Osama bin Laden, which was instantly the culprit, like while the towers were still smoldering, they were already saying, like, I think it was within 45 minutes of the actual first attack, they were already saying it was Osama bin Laden. And then you had the convenient passport from one of the attackers that was in the rubble that they found there. Don't know how that survived.
Pristine condition. Yeah, unscarred, just, you know, just wonderful. So, and yet the black boxes magically, you know, the supposedly non-destructible black boxes, and this isn't the only time, you know, this has occurred where these things have disappeared, just, I guess, it, you know, quite conveniently for the sake of some, presumably the culprits and perpetrators.
And even if you take away the connection with Mossad or the Bush and Cheney connection, and you take away the other connections, one of the most damning evidence that's just if you use logic, you have to think about it in a criminal, what they would do. In any criminal investigation, when there's a shooting, a killing, or anything like that, what they do is they leave the evidence there and they examine the evidence. They examine the evidence, everything. They don't want to disturb it and to mess up possible evidence that could lead to a proper conviction. Now, with 9/11, it was done completely insane. Completely insane. Yes, I know it's a larger scale and it's a little bit crazy and you can't have everything like a perfect sample in a room, but when you send in thousands from all over, thousands of dump trucks to load up all the evidence before it could be investigated properly, and you get it out of there, they loaded up all the steel, all the concrete. They put concrete into holes into the ground and fit potholes. Before they could even get all the bodies out of the rubble and whatnot, they were already shipping off this steel, and they sold the steel to China. And it was one of the fastest cleanup jobs ever. Fastest. But when you're going to go and you're going to convict another country of war, where you go and you kill millions and millions of people over the course of the whole war that you carry out, you think you would spend a little more time to investigate that before you want to ship off all the evidence and sell it off to third parties. It's like, it's insane. It's like, here's this murder weapon. We haven't done any examinations on it yet, but here, let's sell it to some Joe Smo on the street.
It's kind of like the way LBJ dealt with Kennedy's limousine. Same kind of deal, where he could not have it, cleaned down and torn down and reassembled fast enough. So yeah, you're exactly right. Now, Philip Marshall is another example of this, and he figures prominently into things, our discussion here today regarding the whole September 11th. I'm not sure how even to refer to things. This is the mega drama, really. So, but his, supposedly he had published a, several books regarding September 11th, and I was just working on, I think, editing, finishing up, and preparing for publication his third book when he allegedly took a gun, turned it on himself, his two children, and his family dog. The official findings and report on things was that he was in the middle of having to deal with some marital issues. So that's why he did that. But it's interesting, too, because the police investigators could not clean up that crime scene any quicker than what they did. Danny Casolaro, the author of The Octopus, is another former, you know, he was an investigative journalist, found with his wrists slashed, lying dead in a bathtub in some little Motor 8-type motel. I'm not sure what state he was in exactly, but we find this, it's the same MO, the modus operandi, and that in itself, as you say, highly suspicious activity, and you really can, any critical thinking person, how can you not help but ask yourself why? There's always going to be the apologists as well and the debunkers. Yeah, it's great to be skeptical, but when you see these coincidences stacking up one after the other, it gets to the point where I can't help but ask myself, wait a minute, what the hell is going on? You know, this is just a little too weird. Things don't really, they don't add up here. So
another strange bit of evidence that I actually came across for the first time last year is that people weren't just crushed to death. They were pulverized.
There you go. That's right.
Incinerated. You had a mile away, you had buildings. Years down the road, you found small, teeny tiny fragments of bone, human bone, on top of these buildings, several pieces, that were from 9/11 when they were shot out miles. Fragments of bone were just shot miles across New York and other dust and other particles, of course. But how did it just turn into shards? Like, you just pulverize. I mean, that's really interesting when you just think it's a airplane flying into a building.
I was watching Jim Mars comment on that whole matter. Godspeed, Mr. Mars. Thank you for all your great work and research, the books that you published over the years. I think you really helped to wake a lot of people up. Not someone that we had ever really planned on having on the show, mostly because he... like a lot of these other people, he was so prominent and outstanding that it seemed he was getting enough airplay as it was. We're more interested and committed to bringing the lesser-known talents, voices, and personalities on board, giving them a chance to have their thoughts and views heard on any range of different issues. But what he said regarding this whole matter was that with the number of imploded buildings that he had seen and witnessed and been on the scene of over the course of his prestigious, longstanding journalistic career, never had anything like this occurred. Always there would be large chunks and, huge portions of the structure which would remain intact. Same as the, not just, you know, as you say, totally pulverized and ending up in dust type powdery form, to a large degree. Same thing, I guess, with Shanksville, I believe it was, Pennsylvania, that whatever it was that really crashed in that field. Kind of last night, going over, just kind of, getting things ready, for today's conversation, got me thinking about Operation Northwoods and how they talked about in those documents, the very same documents that I guess, were never intended to come to light, and that Kennedy apparently refused to sign off on, but that they had been at that stage practicing and plotting the in-air exchange, or kind of like a handoff of sorts, where you would have a drone replace an airplane and it would not show up on the radar as having occurred whatsoever. So the plane would disappear with the passengers being taken, who knows where their end destination would be and what would actually happen to them ultimately. But yeah, the drone would continue to maintain the course, as it were. So, which maybe in fact, if you look at what supposedly hit the Pentagon, and what a farce that was, when they released, what was it, one or two frames of, there was something like 85, 86 different cameras that recorded the incident, and the FBI, I think, is who it was, they could not get on top of that video evidence fast enough, just as with, I guess, the Kennedy assassination and then folks that had cameras out there and in Dealey Plaza, those good old G-men promising to return the evidence as soon as possible, and that it was being used as part of what they needed for the investigation. So, but yeah, going quickly back to Shanksville and just the pulverization of this plane, no bodies, no wreckage, no evidence or nothing to speak of whatsoever. One of the examples that was used of how there was a plane that flew into a German mountainside, I guess, a number of years ago. I think it too was hijacked, and there was wreckage everywhere. it flew into the mountain at, you would imagine, pretty high speed, but there was tons of evidence. So yeah, that's a real head scratcher. I guess the CNN host at the time, this whatever it was that hit the Pentagon, stated that there was no signs of any aircraft whatsoever. So that too just pulverized and evaporated into nothing. Each of those buildings did. And it's funny too, because so many people, you ask them, how many buildings fell in New York on 9/11? Typically, they'll answer two. A lot of people, even to this day, have no idea there was a third tower. World Trade Center 7, of course.
Look, I've been debating this, the third building, World Trade Center 7, for the past 2 years, like nonstop. Because, there's always the debunkers that come out and say, well, it was office fires that were created. It was structurally damaged from the initial impacts of the towers collapsing. It caused fires in the building. And the fires went unchecked for several hours. And because they went unchecked for several hours, I think they said like 10 to 12 hours the fires were burning by themselves unattended. That was enough to structurally affect the, create a situation where the tower collapsed with it. It wasn't a tower, it was a building. The building collapsed within itself because of the structural integrity. Of course, we know steel doesn't melt until it hits 250,000 degrees, but they'll come back and say, well, it becomes weak and malleable at 1,700 degrees, which the fires could have reached. Well, it wasn't jet fuel either. It was just office fires in that building. And just office chairs and whatnot can't reach that temperature in itself. But still to this day, there's not been another building, even the ones that have been unchecked, even like the ones that these high rises where they're so high they can't put the fire out. I think in Dubai there was a building that burnt for like 20 hours straight all through the night, and they couldn't really put it out, and they just had to let it go. That one didn't collapse. The recent one in England, that one didn't collapse. And you have dozens and dozens of other examples. Yes, some they were trying to fight it, but to an extent there was several that went on hours without being checked, especially the higher levels of the building. Why didn't the higher levels of the building, where they couldn't really reach properly and put out the fire on the inside? You have to, well, you can spray water, but you can't put the water on the inside. So why didn't it collapse on the inside? So I've had these debates about the third tower. But when it comes down to it, there's not another example that you can look to in the past 100 years and say, well, here's a building that came down in a similar manner. There isn't. There's not. It just doesn't happen. You don't have buildings collapse within themselves just from office fires. And that's what happened on 9/11 with World Trade Center 7. And it just so happened to have a lot of government documents that could have been holding information towards the events that went down on that day. So you just have to, think about that whole situation when it comes down to World Trade Center stuff.
Well, Larry Silverstein, for crying out loud, talk about letting the cat out of the bag. You know, there've been such a dramatic loss, I'm paraphrasing now, but such a dramatic loss of life in, you know, that day, and spoke with the firefighters on the scene, and together just, we made the decision to pull it.
You know, some people that need to be strung up and hung in public are the Homeland Security agents at that time, and the heads of those, I forget the names of them. There was one woman, and there was another, and there was the head of security for the city of New York that knew the World Trade Center. This is like non-conspiracy. This is accepted. There was asbestos in the building, and the building was condemned to be taken down a few years prior. Anyway, so it would have been a huge loss of money for Larry Silverstein. But they knew that it had asbestos. So all the first responders, all the people that were there, they were never told. In fact, they came on the television to tell everybody, no, it's safe. You can, to the first responders, that it's fine to dig through the wreckage and try to find people. But a few years later, you have all these people coming up with all these respiratory diseases that are related to asbestos and the inhalation of microparticles that was floating around and very present in downtown New York for weeks after because of that. And anyone that handled the material, the vast majority of them later in life had got cancer and lung diseases and all these different respiratory diseases because of the asbestos and because of the particles they were breathing in, which the safety officials, which are responsible for those type of events, not only neglected to mention it, but told people contrary, even knowing prior to that, that was the case. Those people need to be hung up, in my opinion.
Well, and one person who will never be hung up, there's two actually, but John O'Neill. I'm not sure if the name means anything to you, but from what I understand, he was an FBI, a high-ranking FBI agent who just, I think it might have been his first day on the job, as a matter of fact. His job description, or what the function or role that he was expected to, the capacity he was expected to serve and had to do, it might have been, not sure if it was security. I think that end of things, the security for the Trade Towers, was left in the hands of George W. Bush's brother, of all people, Marvin Bush. So how's that for a small world? But yeah, John O'Neill, he actually died on that day. He was someone who had been investigating Osama bin Laden, a.k.a. CIA asset, Tim Osman. People might want to do a little DuckDuckGo search on that name. Speaking of DuckDuckGo and Alex Jones, something that just constantly, you know, sticks in my craw, gets under my pirate skin, is how he constantly hear the guy say, just Google it. Just Google it, Alex. Just Google it. No, don't Google it. DuckDuckGo, at least, or something, you know, maybe Start Page or what have you. So, but yeah, John O'Neill, God bless him. I think he was one of the good guys, believe it or not. And he was, wow, what a way to go. And just once again, these coincidences stacking up one upon the other to the point where things just, you know, it doesn't look good at all. Barry Jennings, he was one of the workers inside the trade towers as well. He had a rather important job title, but he ended up dying just a couple of years ago under, I guess, what turned out to be rather peculiar circumstances. He was a witness to one of the guys who talked about the bombs going off before any plane hit, you know. So, and there's been a few people that talked about that. Another name is Alex Rodriguez. Is it Alex Rodriguez? Or is another Rodriguez? I think Alex is the baseball player. Anyways, who ended up coming out and speaking on the record as far as, I think, quite similar things. The bombs going off and peculiarities, things that just did not exactly jive with the official narrative. He ended up losing his job, you know, being found himself unemployed, homeless. And I'm not sure if the guy's even still alive or not. So talk about what a devastating impact and a day of hell, really. Although, you know, so many people, of course, cashed in, as you know, we've talked about here, Larry Silverstein, who just apparently suddenly, I guess, according to the official story, had a doctor's appointment come up from out of the blue that had not been in place at the time. Or else he would have been in the building, I guess, somewhere on the top of the towers having breakfast. His two children were, I guess, running late that day, so they both escaped what would have, you know, been probably a certain death. But let's talk a little bit about PNAC. Let's really back things up here, because this is something I hammer away at, and it's something that is widely discussed, and how the neocons, this the PNAC Project for a New American Century, the think tank that I guess has now been dissolved on at least a formal basis, although I'm sure they're, you know, these birds of a feather able to reform and come up with new ways of approaching things and working on pursuing their political agendas. But General Wesley Clark, you got to give the guy credit. He too came out on the record and talked about how just shortly after leaving, being dismissed from Donald Rumsfeld, his office and his presence, it was a really curt dismissal too, for some reason. But he went and spoke to one of the people, I guess it was the Pentagon or Defense Department, I would imagine, and had it drawn to his attention how it was a classified memo that this lower ranking person was sharing with him. He didn't show it to him, but he did tell him about it. And this basically laid out how the Bush administration was, you know, set and determined to invade 7 countries in 5 years, including, Syria, Iraq, Libya, Sudan. Don't think for some reason Afghanistan. I couldn't find that on the list. I don't know why. But now, of course,
it's Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Iran.
Why they didn't have Afghanistan on the list, I don't know. But it was interesting to note that just the day before September 11th, that the head of the Northern Alliance, Afghanistan's Northern Alliance, what is his name now? Anyways, he was an opponent to and a rival to Osama bin Laden, was assassinated by 2 suicide bombers who, I guess, had strapped these bomb vests, I think is what they're known as, onto themselves and managed to gain a personal audience with the man. Let's see if I can find his name here. Scrolling down through the notes. No. But anyways, oh, here we go. Yeah, Massoud, September 10th, and blew themselves as well as Massoud and his some of his people, you know, higher-ranking folks that were there and part of his militia, I guess. Everyone died from the sounds of things. So the timing couldn't have been on that day. Putin, on the record, he's, you know, you can find us on YouTube, where Putin, upon hearing the news, picked up the phone and called Bush saying, this has just occurred here. The head of the Northern Alliance in Afghanistan has been assassinated. I think something quite big is in the works. And we all know what happened the next day. Another thing dealing with September 10th is how Donald Rumsfeld came out on that day talking about the $2.3 trillion missing from and could not be accounted for, you know, within the Defense Department budget, had just kind of magically disappeared. Is that not the case?
It was just some loose ends, you know, just some tax. We didn't.
He has never been pressed by a single member of the mainstream corporate media on that issue. You know, hey, what's a trillion here, a trillion there? You know, I mean, maybe they can't count that high or something. Who knows?
That's chump change to a Rothschild.
Isn't it interesting, too, that the Pentagon, I guess, the cornerstone, and there's where you got, I guess, you know, I would imagine if you look into things, you would find it's the, you know, consecration ceremony of the September 11th, 1941. I guess that would have been just a couple months before Pearl Harbor. Was it the groundbreaking of the cornerstone ceremony? So, you know, some, I would imagine, pretty significant Freemasonic activity there in a ritualistic sense. That's always interesting to note. Henry Kissinger on September 11th was, I guess, set to be facing war crimes charges in a formal capacity. I didn't get a chance to really look into that too much, whether that was him actually being asked to appear in The Hague or what have you. But isn't it interesting, too? And that's because that goes back to his role in the Allende Chile coup of 1971, I guess, is what it was.
Right.
It was at Allende and Pinochet, both of whom, speaking of Freemasons, I guess they were members and brothers in good standing, although I guess Allende, well, maybe he forgot to throw up the grand hailing sign of distress or something. They, as with Joseph Smith, the former head of the Mormon Church, same kind of deal there. So, quite something. Have you heard of the Otago Messaging Service?
It doesn't actually ring a bell.
Well, you know the story about how, and this kind of goes back to how also there was such very oddly so few people flying on any of the planes that actually went down on that day. There was four planes. There was only one of them that was filled to half capacity. The others were, you know, 23, 16%, that sort of thing. Like, it was just ridiculous numbers, really odd. The insider trading on the stock market, too, let's not forget. So some pretty shady stuff going on there just a few days before the attacks, as if somebody knew what was coming. But there's all kinds of points here that we could address. And I would like to get into the whole Syria thing and business of greater Israel. So let's see. I think now might actually be the time to do that. Just going to quickly check a few of the other notes that we have here. So let me just cue things up here by saying I'm going to just, it's from the PNAC documents, Rebuilding America's Defenses, 1977, page 51. The PNAC program, in a nutshell, America's military must rule out even the possibility of a serious global or regional challenger anywhere in the world. The regime of Saddam Hussein must be toppled immediately by U.S. force, if necessary. And the entire Middle East must be reordered according to an American plan. PNAC's most important study notes that selling this plan to the American people will likely take a long time. Quote, absent some catastrophic catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. You know, so I mean, my God, Merry Christmas, PNAC. You got what you were waiting for there, so well done. Fait accompli. But if you could maybe just kind of tie that into the whole business, of course, the neocons, who do we got there? Wolfowitz, Paul Wolfowitz, of course, and I'm not sure if you've researched the intellectual or the ideological end of things. I know you brought up the Sabbateans and how there's some sort of strange alliance with the Wahhabi, the House of Saud, and this rogue type Frankenstein almost Islamic sect is what it seems.
It's funny you said Frankenstein.
Just looking around for a few other
because the Sabbateans actually became the Franks, what was known as the Franks. They kind of like went through a conversion process where they were either forced or decided to convert over to different religions such as Christianity, Buddhism, Islam, and, you know, other popular religions, and then actually move to those areas and essentially take over their governments from within, or at least from through the elite. by gaining power by intermarrying with the elites of each society they went to, by conforming to their rules and then conspiring under the table. Yeah, that's what I'm currently doing research on right now as far as the Sabbateans. With the whole 9/11 thing and connecting that to the Greater Israel Project, which is very important, and you can't talk about 9/11 without actually connecting the two together if you start to dig into it. You have to look at things like most people know about Wesley Clark talking about, you know, the seven countries in 5 years, which took a little bit longer than expected, but they got most of the job done. That was not new at that time. In fact, in a Zionist journal published in Connecticut, I think, at the time, it was a Zionist group. A Zionist Jew posted, I forget what his position was, but he was a dual national Israeli citizen and part of the Israeli government at one time, published the Yanan Plan in 1982. And that actually laid out the entire process of what we're doing today. That lays out nearly to a T what we're doing in the Middle East right now. And I know a lot of people will come out and say, well, the Yanan Plan, it was an obscure article. It was this, it was that. It's not representative of everybody's point of view. And that's all fine and nice, but it's the same. You have to look at the same circumstances when it comes to things like the Yanan Plan and also the book that was written in the 1800s, the Protocols of the the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Sion. It's a hard one to say sometimes.
Hashtag Plez.
Right. But it's the same way with that. That's often cited as being an obscure and hoax. But at the same time, even if it was a hoax, somebody is following it to a T.
There you go.
They are following it hand in hand.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter if it's a hoax at that point when somebody's carrying it out like it's their religion.
Just another coincidence theory, James. Just another coincidence theory.
It could very well be a hoax, but somebody with power and the ability to move and shake takes up that plan and they start following it to like a religion, like I said.
And let's not forget the clergy plan. I'll just throw this out there for you. The clergy plan as well. People really got to look into that too, just to, as far as what we see presently unfolding in Europe, the impact this has had. You know, people don't seem to understand that grand chessboard, as Zbigniew Brzezinski referred to it as, keep your eyes on the pieces now, kids, follow the ball, and that with the Hegelian dialectic, none of this, what we see presently unfolding in Europe, would have ever come about had it not been for September 11th, period. Go ahead.
Right. And all these different plans that you've had years in advance. And with the protocols of Elders of Zion, that was laying out the plans of creating an Israel. And we saw those carried out through the creation of World War I, through the creation of World War II, that the Zionists had a large role in playing in creating that. They saw the tensions, they lay this out in their book, they saw the tensions in all these different groups. Yes, there was tensions between them, but there had to be somebody to go and tip that off. They had to poke the bear in the right place to get it angry, to get these wars going. And then you had, in World War One, it would have been over and done with, and then you had the Zionists, which in America at the time, there was a large presence of Zionists, both in America and Europe. And then you had them get America into the war, which otherwise the war would have ended and it wouldn't have been as bloody as it was. Then you had the exact same thing happen in World War Two, and again, this is negating all the other facts of it, but in World War II, you had, again, the Zionists that were wanting their so-called homeland in Palestine. They needed this years beforehand in newspapers and public speeches by the groups of these Zionist communities were talking about there's an upcoming Holocaust. And I think there's even one quote where he says in 1938, I think, in 2 years, or not in 2 years, but in the upcoming Holocaust, I don't think there will be 2 million Jews that will survive it, but the 2 million that do survive it will be ready and prepared for their new home in Palestine. And you had this way in advance of World War II. So after World War II, thanks to the hands of the Rothschilds and the English government that was divvying up all these Middle Eastern countries because they were their former territories, the deals that they did with the Palestinians where they double-crossed it said, okay, the Palestinians, you can keep your land. But at the same time, you had the Rothschilds kind of sign off. I forget what it's called. It's the something.
The Balfour Declaration?
Yeah, the Balfour Declaration that happened plenty of times in advance, which essentially gave Israel or gave Palestine to the Zionists. And the Zionists, which were armed by the United States, armed by Britain, came in and forced everybody out that wasn't willing to leave. And then you had them provoke war with their Arab neighbors that were way outnumbered, way outmatched. They didn't have armies to fight because these are newly formed countries as well. Didn't have the ability to fight Israel that was armed with tanks and trained commandos of the Zionist armies at that time. Destroy the Arab nations of Syria, destroy the Arab nation of Egypt and the other surrounding nations, and then they claim they were attacked by small armies. And anyway, these plans are long in advance. So with 9/11, what happened in advance of that, which is to further, again, Israel, you had them going there because of the Protocols of Elders of Zion and with the help of the Rothschild family. That wanted that land for themselves as well because there's natural resources. They wanted more. This is where it comes into the Greater Israel Project. They didn't want just this part of Israel. They wanted the Sinai. They wanted the lower part of Egypt that has all the waterways that you can go through there, the peninsula there. They wanted the northern portion of Saudi Arabia. They wanted, what is that? Southern Syria. And they wanted, or southern and northern Syria as well, because of its natural resources, because of its geopolitical advantages, because of the trade, because of this, because of that. Because they're not just crazy idiots. They want things for a reason. They want money, power, and wealth, and control over society. That's when it comes to people that are Sabbateans or saboteurs or just plain out evil, or you know, they don't have morals. That's what they want. They just want wealth, power, and...
Yeah, isn't that interesting, too? The word, the prefix there, the saboteurs, the Sabbateans, the Sabbath... You know, if you look at that, like, it's like, well, once again, is that just a strange?
It's a pretty funny coincidence.
How about the Ashkenazis? The Ashkenazis? Hello, people. Whoa. It's like,
the origin of saboteur is actually referring to in Holland, they have wooden shoes, and that's how you say, like, sabot is saying wooden shoe, and I forget what language is spoken in Holland, forgive me.
Dutch?
Dutch. But that's what that means. But I was thinking the same thing, but I couldn't find a major connection. But I'm sure there's something, or it's a very clever play on words. But as far as Sabbatean, the word Sabbatean is referring to their original Messiah, very literally their Messiah, Sabbatia Zeviah.
Zevi. Was it 1666? Wasn't that the year that he came?
Right. In 1666, he announced that he was the Messiah, and he had millions of followers, and actually, I think, had about half of the Jewish population following him at that time. So, yeah, there was definitely a large movement, and like I said, they say they went away, but they didn't go away. They just converted and to infiltrated into other parts of religions, including the other half of Judaism that was not following the Sabbatean ways, which was completely... wrong, and not even, you know, it was satanic. They practiced Satanism and killing children and holding sacrifices and doing essentially what people talk about when it comes to Pizzagate and whatnot and all these satanic rituals. That's where you get that kind of stuff, and that's why when you talk about the Illuminati and what that, it's not mysterious. It has an origin. Because the Sabbateans were mystics, they're the original Kabbalists. This is where you get the Kabbalah from. When Alex Jones talks about, oh, it's the Kabbal or this or that, they just give generic terms. They're not telling you that it was actually a Jewish sect that created this, an extreme version of Judaism that was corrupt.
Hang on just a second there, James. The extreme crypto-Judaic, can I get that word out of my mouth straight or not? Judeo sect that created what exactly?
one from...
Well, created subversion. Subversion within society. They practiced and believed that they can better themselves by subversion.
You're talking about order out of chaos.
Right, and I think they said they go to heaven through sinning or something like that. They fulfill their sins through blood. Or they have a couple terms that they go by, but if you look at the Mossad... Through deception, I wage war. That's essentially how they went at it. Through deception, they waged their war to embetter themselves and only themselves. So that's where you have the division of the Zionist. That's where Zionism originated from, those types of people. And your Rothschild Zionist and whatnot, that's where that originated. And that's when they converted to Franks. That's where you had the Rothschilds come into the picture. I want to hurry up and tie this thing because I know we've gone a long time. I want to tie it back into 9/11. I could talk about it forever. But with 9/11, what I'm saying is we had the Anon Plan, which is the Greater Israel Project, which the Greater Israel Project is, yes, to obtain all these different parts of land in the Levant and that area of the Middle East, which if you control that, you have money, power, and wealth a lot more than they have. Well, you say, well, they have that already. With these type of people, they can never satisfy their wealth. It's a nuance. That's why you have millionaires, billionaires, and trillionaires. They can never satisfy their taste. That's when they want to become, what do you call it, philanthropist, and then they start dealing in other people's lives. What I'm saying is that plan was already written in stone long before it's been carried out. So 9/11 was already, maybe not specifically 9/11, but they already knew that they needed an event to get America involved into carrying out their dirty work. And you have these people in the American government. That's why you have no American president can do anything without the express written consent of the AIPAC or the Zionist lobbies. How many countries does the presidential candidates go to and they essentially kiss the feet of their Zionist masters? You don't see that with any other country. Every year you see all the political candidates have to go there and basically have a American idol except a Zionist idol. Who can be the best puppet for Israel? Because they have to carry out, or at least act like they're going to carry out the plans. There was a little bit of beef between Obama, because Obama had a conflict of interest with the liberal power elites and Zionism, because not everything's one big conglomerate, as people assume. There is a trouble in paradise for these types of criminals that carry out their evil all over the world. But events like 9/11, that was to expressly get us involved into destabilizing the Middle East so they can take over. This is why you have them occupying Syria. This is why you have Israel taking part in this as well. They don't want strong enemies. That's what's laid out in the Yanan plan word for word. They explicitly point out that they don't want strong Syria. They don't want a strong Libya, a strong Iraq. They didn't want a strong Iran because those are opponents to their plans in that area. America doesn't have plans there. You might can say, oh, well, there's oil this or oil that. Yes, that is some aspect of it. But when it comes down to it, you don't have the same thing happening for Russia. You don't have the same thing happening for China. You have China doing things in their own backyard, yes. And then there's some critiques I can have for these countries. But you don't have them over in South America buying up oil reserves there or coming invading countries that don't convert to their political systems, overthrowing their governments and sending in their Russian agents to subvert those countries to turn to their side kind of thing. No, you see this happening with Israel. You see it happening with the CIA. You see their subversion tactics. You see the coups that go down. Almost all the Arab leaders in the summit link now are all American or Israeli puppets. Anybody that isn't essentially has their country invaded, like Syria, for which Bashar al-Assad has been an open opponent to his invaders because they own the Golan Heights right now. That's occupied Syrian land according to international law. And there was a peace treaty signed in 1973 at the end of the War of Yom Kippur, where they were still occupying Syrian land. Imagine if we got into a war with Mexico, or America and Canada got into a war, and after the peace treaty was signed, they said, well, say Canada had taken over Maine. What if Canada, after signing that peace treaty, saying they would give back Maine, decided not to give back Maine? And then the international committee said, oh, it's not a big deal. We're not going to look at it. It doesn't work that way. It's the same way with Palestine, according to the 1960 67 agreement, I believe, between Palestine and Israel to divvy up that country, but they continue to occupy Palestine. Again, it's called the Greater Israel Project for a reason. You can look it up. It was laid out by the founder of Zionism, which all Zionists created Israel. So yes, it is relevant to Israel today. But the founder of Zionism says that Israel should be between the Euphrates and the Sinai, which is from Egypt all the way up to Turkey. That area belongs to Israel, according to the Zionists. And unless they are put in check, like some countries have been doing, because, again, there's trouble in paradise. Yes, I even think in Russia and China and whatnot, there's Illuminati-esque type groups where they don't have necessarily the people of best of mind, but they have enough real people in these countries that they step up and say, hold on a minute, international law actually means something, and we want to enforce it. That's why in 2015 you had Russia coming in and say, hold up now, I see what you're doing. We saw it in Libya, not happening anymore. So yes, I still have issues with Russia in certain circumstances, but I have massive respect for those people that actually stopped, stood up, and they put an end to it, because we have to go by something. If international law means nothing unless nothing to a Zionist, but then everyone else has to follow it, that's not how the world works. You see what I'm saying? That's what 9/11 was all about.
Yeah, but hang on there. I mean, there's more to it than just that.
I was jumping ahead, but what I mean is that's what it was all about in respects to that. There was other reasons. Every event like that has multiple reasons. Yeah, I have to be clear on that. Yes, there's the oil interest. Yes, there was the interest of spying on the citizens in the United States, giving more power to the government. There's all kinds of reasons why 9/11 and other events that continue to happen to this day are carried out, false flags. But one of the main reasons was the Israeli interest, and that cannot be ignored because of the Mossad presence. You had the documents laying out how they wanted to do it previously, and then we basically carried it out for them. Whether or not that was 100% pre-planned, at the very least, you have to admit that we just so happened to carry out these plans for these Zionists. I bet you they're happy.
Well, sure. And let's not forget who was running security in, from what I understand, every single one of the airports. The hijackers just happened to, coincidentally, the most heavily defended and secure, supposedly, country
airspace
in the world as far as, you know, the surveillance.
The supposed plane that crashed into the Pentagon did a freaking loop-de-loop and took, like 15 minutes to fly around to glide perfectly down into the Pentagon?
Yeah, well, rookie pilots, hey, you know, you look, there's a great documentary that was put together. It's called, it's The Flying Circus. If people want to look up, do a search for that title, Muhammad Atta, and they trained down in Florida. There are other bases, I guess, U.S. military bases these pilots were trained on. These are not theories. These are proven facts. So, you know, this is something that people have really got to, once again, just more coincidences or not. Like you're hitting on there, not just the geopolitical end of things, but also civil liberties and personal privacy, more of a justification, the Unpatriot Act. So many people refer to it as the Patriot Act, you know, bullshit. Come on, people, stop doing that. Smart technology. Come on, folks. It's not smart. It's stupid. And you're being spied on. Every form of smart technology that's out there there's an underlying spy function to
this. 9/11 disbanded any bit of privacy we may have had at the turn of the century. All our privacy because of that event has been uprooted. If you don't believe it, just look at your phone or look at your TV or look at if you're connected to the web in any kind of way. Your information, your packets that you're connecting to the internet are sent through a database in one way or another. You have no privacy. Everything is collected. Everything is, you're watched. Cameras everywhere. That skyrocketed. Look at fusion centers.
Oh, hell yeah.
Fusion centers where you had all these different agencies come together and conspire with different evidence on people that weren't actually convicted of any crimes yet just because of possibilities. where we have to give up our freedoms because of possibilities. There's a possibility of anything happening, but that doesn't mean you give up your rights for that. But yes, I know exactly what you're going at there. That's, yes, that's another big reason why 9/11 was carried out.
Biometrics, facial recognition, these scanners, the body scanners that were put into the airports. Not sure if you know who's behind that or not. Michael Chertoff, former head of Homeland Security. You have this public-private partnership, continually this endless revolving door from the world of government and politics into the world of corporations. Textbook fascism, frankly. Dual American-Israeli citizen Michael Chertoff. There's many others. Rahm Emanuel, I believe, is another. His father was a full-blown Israeli terrorist. If people want to, you know, look into that, it just takes a couple minutes. I think he was a leader of the so-called Stern Group. And apparently, as far as these full body, these X-ray, the scanners that they put into the many airports throughout the world now have kind of quietly been withdrawn, supposedly because so many people, largely airport workers themselves, have been coming down and contracting cancer, if you can believe that. Surprise, surprise. Well, you know, we've covered a lot of issues here, but we've hardly really even gotten into things. Where was George H.W. Bush on the morning of 9/11? He just so happened, and that's Skull and Bones.
Reading the kids. One.
No. I'm talking about George, the father, the patriarch of the criminal syndicate. He was meeting, I think it was the Ritz-Carlton, it was the Carlyle Group meeting with other members of the Bin Laden family. Wow, there's just another one of those coincidences that you can add to your list, folks, if you're not quite getting the picture yet here. So, frankly, you know, it really, you can make the case for high-level treason. And it's unfortunate that really so little has been done to hold anyone accountable. Donald Trump talked a little bit about this over the course of his election campaign. A lot of rhetoric regarding 28 pages. And in the end, what does it all come down to when the 28 pages finally are released, more or less? I think there's even still parts of the content.
Essentially, what the 28 pages will do will then be a scapegoat for, say, the Bush administration and the CIA and the others that were involved, including the Mossad and the Israeli agents as well. That's what that 28 pages is.
Well, it's the Saudis, James, I think, is who it kind of...
Right. It essentially puts all the blame on the Saudis, which is a red herring. Yeah, I'm sure they place it.
It's a limited hangout is what it's known, I think, in intelligence parlance. Have you heard the term limited hangout, where they just give you a little bit of the truth and then say, okay, there we go, case closed, we've done it.
Right, it's just one of the conspirators being ratted out and the rest are getting off the hook is what the 28 pages is.
I guess so. The pressure's being turned up to the point where they're essentially compelled to take some form of action, so... You know, and there's so much with this 9/11 Untruth Commission that was redacted. People like William Rodriguez, I guess that was his name. His testimony was, I don't think it found its way, nor Barry Jennings, you know, typical kind of, you know, really reminiscent of the whole JFK thing, frankly, where you have these key witnesses whose testimonies are just completely ignored because they don't fit with the official narrative. There was one other key player as well, Norman Mineta, then secretary. And this is really damning as far as the truth of the matter, what actually occurred the morning of September 11th. He was then Secretary of Transportation, I believe, for the country. And he happened to find his way into, I guess, Cheney's command and control, the bunker that he had there. I don't know where it was exactly, if it was a Pentagon or the basement underneath the White House or what have you, but he claims to have been there, and Cheney was giving orders to one of his, just a little, like an underling of sorts, and the plane kept coming in. It was like 30 miles from the Pentagon, 20 miles from the Pentagon, 10 miles. Do the orders still stand, Mr. Cheney? His head, I guess, according to Mineta's testimony, whipped around, and he said, have I said anything to the contrary? That kind of deal. So he basically, just they're sitting there watching this plane coming in, or whatever it was, this object of some sort that was coming up on the radar, making a beeline for the Pentagon, and he essentially allowed it to happen. So incredible. Let's not forget, too, the handoff that was made, too, the protocol with respect to NORAD, how that was just changed a couple months before, just in June, I guess, of it was Cheney once again, good old, you know, Dr. Evil Dick Cheney. You remember the famous, during the Hurricane Katrina, he was on the ground there making the rounds, just, you know, his heart just bleeding, you know, such sympathy for the victims. And a live interview on TV, one of the passers-by shouted out, "Fuck you, Mr. Cheney." So, I mean, I think if I was there, I probably would have, I don't know what I would have done. Probably something a little more extreme, to tell you the truth. You know, having the knowledge that I do, that action's got to be taken. But, well, his old heart there can't hold up forever. So, you know, the karmic debt will at some point be paid, I do believe. But look, man, we've been going for a while here now. There's so much more ground that could be covered. Anything else, just final points you want to hit on before we call it a night?
Like I said, there's not going to be enough time to ever cover all about the history of Zionism and the Sabbateans. But I did just launch, I mean, like, just like 30 minutes before we hopped on here, a project, because we crowdfunded the last video and it was a success. 120 minutes. Got a dog. Hold on. It was a full-length movie, and we're crowdfunding another one. It might not be full-length, but it's going to be a good one, about the Sabbateans. And me and Seven Haven are going to be working on this one. And if anybody knows Seven Haven, he's a Jew. I think he goes by Samaritan Jew, but nevertheless, he's a Jew that goes against Zionism.
He's a good Samaritan.
Right. He goes against Zionism, goes against the Sabbateanism.
Well, and let's not forget, just to remind listeners, too, I'm sure a few are aware, but not all Jews, many, in fact, they oppose Zionism and the State of Israel for any number of different reasons, whether religious reasons or just philosophical ones. And the fact of the matter is that the majority of those who support the State of Israel are fundamentalist Christians. That's what it seems to me, at least. That's my impression.
Right, right. Zionist Christians are one of the biggest supporters of that. A lot of that has to do with the infiltration of these churches and these large churches. Because if you're going to infiltrate anywhere, why not the largest ones? You know, these big churches that broadcast to literally over a billion people, that TBN in particular broadcast to all around the world, that spew nothing but Zionist propaganda, where they just say, oh, Israel belongs here, Israel's great, Israel's being attacked by everyone else, Israel's defending itself, it has its right to do this, Israel's not doing anything wrong, they're God's chosen people, the Bible says it, Bible says you basically have to kiss their ass kind of situation, to the point to where it's disgusting. It's very disgusting. But if you actually sit down with these people and you show them in the Bible itself, it shows that very contrary to what these different Zionist churches are putting out. Even according to the Bible, it's saying that the Jews were actually cast out of Israel. Yes, God did say the Jews were the chosen people. Yes, God did promise them that land. But in the Bible, it also says, if you actually look at the context, God took away that from them because they broke the promises that they had for God. So that's something that a lot of these Christians don't focus on and are manipulated to support war, support the war on the Palestinians, support the war in Syria and whatnot. And my dog's saying hi again. So. So yeah, that's basically what I want to just cover there, and I definitely appreciate you having me on. I always have fun coming on and enjoy talking with you and the other guys and gals that are sometimes.
Well, you betcha. Puppies of War coming through loud and clear via the Robin Hood here, our central communication center. So just any last, well, you've got your Tyranny Unmasked channel there once again on YouTube, over on minds.com. You can be found on pretty much, well, quite a few different media outlets, Twitter and Facebook, your Texas UFO channel too. Let's not forget, we'll have to have you back and talk to you about that.
Mentioned it since I last been on, but I launched tyrannyunmasked.us. That's the central location for Tyranny Unmasked now. Tyrannyunmasked.us, and I'll send a link to Jaffe. It has the projects, it has the YouTube channel, the Steam it, the mines, the everything's there. You can find it there. It's the best way to contact me too, because I have a specific email that shoots right to my phone, and every time someone sends it there,
every time, yeah, you get notifications on a real time sort of, you know, being kept up to speed as far as, social media engagement and so forth. Your channel does really great too. I mean, the numbers that you get are quite something. I don't think you're buying any of those hits either, nor do we, of course. We're just, there's no reason, we don't see any reason for doing that at all. Just, in fact, though, we use YouTube here for the simple reason of streaming the show out live, having it recorded in conjunction with our OBS software, and chatting with people as we carry on and present things here to listeners. That's about it. So we're more focused really with the MP3 audio end of things and putting together quality post-produced product and content via Podomatic. So we're going to wrap things up here with a speech from George W. Bush, which I spent a lot of time initially looking around for. You might be familiar with this, James, but it was something that really struck me as quite ironic, given his skull and bones affiliation, his father's as well, and many of these other folks that it seems were a part of this, well, this the day that, as with Pearl Harbor, has now managed to forever live in infamy. So these are remarks that he delivered at the Department of Defense Service of Remembrance at the Pentagon, October 11th, 2001, 1 month following the attacks. What he stated was, "The hijackers were instruments of evil who died in vain. Behind them is a cult of evil which seeks to harm the innocent and thrives on human suffering. Theirs is the worst kind of cruelty, the cruelty that is fed, not weakened, by tears. Theirs is the worst kind of violence, pure malice, while daring to claim the authority of God. We cannot fully understand the designs and power of evil. It is enough to know that evil, like goodness, exists. And in the terrorists, evil has found a willing servant." So yeah, Skull and Bone Society out of Yale. A lot of CIA recruits, I guess, managing to find their way through the ranks via that, what is sometimes referred to as crypto-Masonic organization. But the point that he really hits on there too, which is quite interesting and harkens back to what you had referenced earlier regarding these Sabbateans, is how with this business of good and evil, they feel that they're actually, that they need to go around killing people, you know, screwing over, raping the goy. That's fine. I think it's written into some of their Talmudic literature that it's considered.
Yeah, something to be said about the, something to be said about the Talmud. If you actually talk to actual real practicing Jews about the Talmud, it's not even so much as the Talmud itself is promoting those acts. The way that the Talmud is actually written, it's written it's like an examination where you have all these different practices of Judaism, which include that of the Sabbateans, written into the Talmud. Now, it doesn't expressly condone those actions, but it'll have them there, sort of like a multiple choice. Like, you have to choose which one is the right one, which one is the wrong one, which one is the right one, and then you have the commentary on the side on which they tell you which is wrong, which is right. And a lot of the Talmudic stuff that's people quote, and some corrupt Jews will follow, is that of the Sabbatean practices that are written into the Talmud, and other extremes wrong, even according to mainstream Judaism, practices that are pretty wild and such. Which there are my beefs with regular Judaism as well, but I'm saying a lot of the wild stuff is, you know, that added on commentary. Sort of like how the Wahhabs, which, surprise, surprise, was in connection with the Sabbateans, was that added on commentary that told you, no, this is not what the fifth pillar means. It means to go kill people. kind of added on commentary with Islam.
Well, and that's one of the things I was thinking of while you were kind of unpacking things there for us, is how the power of these imams, the clerics, the Muslim Islamic priests, really just, you know, they are the parishioners. Are, I guess, obligated and expected to act in accordance with the imam's interpretation of each and every Quranic passage. Is that not the case? You know what? That's a financial
building. Those people. Right. A lot of those imams do follow. What they do is they follow it literally, very literally. This is fundamentalist and then extremist as well, where they take it very literally and not for the philosophical things it's pointing out. With jihad, it's talking about your battle with your faith and your battle with your spirituality. But, and then if you take a fundamentalist, they'll translate that into, it's a physical battle with the infidel and a physical battle and killing the non-believers. That's how you get all these different sects. And then it hurts when you have these other radical preachers coming in and saying, no, this is what it means. It means this. You gotta take it literally. That's where a lot of the issues come in. When you have saboteurs coming in and teaching that, that's where the problems arise.
If only they were familiar with the saying of the Buddha. A lot of great stuff there coming from the Buddha, but the one in particular I'm thinking of, it's a popular Zen expression, I believe, stating, for one, not to confuse the finger pointing for the moon. There's talk, of course, in the New Testament as well, which is more powerful, the letter or the spirit, you know, that kind of deal. And I think Paul responded to the whole business, you know. So, yeah, you get too legalistic with the actual word rather than, and that's the small. If you look at the actual word, some people talk about the word of God. Well, it's logos, folks, and it's a Greek word that does mean word. So word,
right.
James.
You know. And in the Christian Bible, yeah, and in the Christian Bible and in the Torah as well, a lot of the things that the Zionist Christians will point out is that, well, here it says he does this for Israel, or Israel's their chosen people. A thing they have to realize is that there's two different meanings for the same word for Israel in the Bible and in the Torah, which a lot of people understand, but a good portion don't, is that a lot of the time God quoting the Bible was referring to the spiritual state of Israel, which he considered people that were followers of God, they were Israelites. And that's a spiritual thing it's talking about. It's not talking about the physical body of land, a lot of the cases in the Bible.
Sounds highly reminiscent of this whole business of Arianism, and that with the Buddha, the way that he clearly stated things is that anyone could be an Arian. It had nothing to do with your skin or your ethnicity. It was more...
Right, it was a
Martin
spiritual
Luther
aspect.
Yeah, Martin Luther King Jr. put it so well that, you know, judging people based on the content of their character rather than, you know, the way that they appear, the color of their skin or what have you. So those are the noble ones. You know, it's has to do with your character. On that note, once again, yes, we've got a few great shows coming up here. And thanks once again, James, for being a part of things. Without you, I don't know, probably would have stumbled and fumbled around a lot more, really kind of, almost.
You would have been all right.
a bit of a train wreck for sure. So, but we've got a lot of great shows coming up here over the course of the next couple of months. We are booked, folks, for the entire rest of the year 2017. We're even putting the schedule together for the new year, believe it or not. So next week we're going to be having Suzanne Marr revisit us. She's, of course, one of the leading figures with the Bye Bye Blue Skies project. We're going to be talking chemtrails, geoengineering, Tesla technology, all those sort of great things, and how this whole business of weather warfare is a reality and has been going on for quite a long time, whether people realize it or not, whether the large mainstream media, you know, chooses to talk about this whole business or not. I guess, you know, a lot of them prefer to focus more on things like the Kardashians and the latest sports scores and that sort of thing. Or when they do talk about climate change, it all has to do with the evil carbon particle, CO2, and how we have to wage war on that and, you know, send in your tax dollars so that we can do our best trying to, solve problems that way. Talk Like a Pirate Day on the 22nd of the month here, September, is what we'll be having a lot of fun there. A little more of a lighthearted approach to things. I haven't really managed to brush up too well on my pirate lingo, even though I've spent a lot of time on the ship here. My main priority, of course, has just been mainly making sure that we've got some content we're able to present to people here on a week-to-week basis. Wrapping things up on the 29th is Innerverse. Chance will be dropping by. He's got his own great little podcast that he puts out on, I think, 2 to 3 times a week. He's really active and high profile there over on Minds. So looking forward to having him join us. He's one of our Patreon supporters, too, which, I mean, we think the world of these folks. Kelly Freeman, of course, is another. And, I mean, I just can't say enough about people like Kelly or Chance and, of course, Carol Sloan. We've got helping us out there with Patreon. Half of all that money that we've got coming in that we generate with each item, piece of content that is published via Patreon, of course, goes directly straight to charity. So some really great karma being generated there on their end of things. October, of course, and November, pretty solid as far as shows and whatnot are concerned, but I think that's about it for today's conversation. Thanks once again, James, as well as all of the listeners, people. We were up to about as many as about 8 people from what I could see there on the live streaming end of things via YouTube today. So Christina, I'm assuming that it is, Hero Motivators, thanks for dropping by. We got the after show here too, of course. Joe Eminon, you feel free to be a part of things. We can mute you if you've got your audio issues. Again, that's not a problem. We can work around that without too much difficulty. In the meantime, folks, so all the best. Always remember never to forget. But the one thing that we got to reflect upon, though, as well, too, is to be really careful and vigilant how it is we actually do remember the events of 9/11 and what occurred in America on that fateful day. Aye now. Thar we be. Having carefully looked over each of our navigation panel instruments, checking every level, switch, knob, and dial, by all accounts and indications, we indeed see it's time once again to drop anchor inside the bay and draw an end to another week of Pirate Radio Podcasts. Don't forget, if you're looking for a little more free-flowing action, we've likely got another great Rogues Gallery after show coming up next in either Google Hangouts or Skype. Also, if you've in any way enjoyed or found yourself benefiting from the shows we've tirelessly produced over the past year and a half plus, you might want to drop by our new Patreon tip jar page and lend a little support. Presently commanding a whole 6 big ones per episode, our unimpeachable longshoreman math skills tell us we're on course this year to set aside around $150 in charity. Help to keep those numbers growing over on Patreon, and we'll be able to extend even more of a generous pirate hand. Be sure to join us again same time next week. Amazingly, we're now booked solid until December, with a whole wide range of colorful guests and show topics, along with what's bound to be a few big surprises. So be sure to drop by WPRPN.com's feature interview area and check out what we've got on tap for the last few months of 2017. If you yourself have an intriguing idea for a guest or story, You can either drop us a line directly over on WPRPN.com or fire us a quick email via PirateOneRadio@gmail.com. WPRPN.com network subdomain links are also now available. Great for artists, musicians, podcasters, social media personalities, or pretty much just any landlubber. Looking to boost their online visibility, presence, and reach, basic accounts can be launched for only $15 a year. Staking your claim now helps not only strengthen you and the network, we're also looking out for the little guy. That's right, folks. Half of all WPRPN's profits are redirected right back into the hands of the people who really need it most. Community charity. After all, we are the Robin Hood. You can further embark on your own personal pirate journey by liking, subscribing, commenting on, sharing, and following any of our main social media channels via Facebook, iTunes, Twitter, YouTube, Google+, or Minds.com. So don't forget to become engaged. Until we meet again out on the high digital seas, I'm your host as always, the ship's chief communications officer, Jaffe Ryder. Tally-ho!